Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama daf Kuf Yud Beis. We are holding at the top of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the first line, Rav Adam Bar Ava. Gemara today on Amud Aleph is going to continue the discussion of Yeyosh and Shinui Rishus and whether someone acquires through both of them, through one of them. That's mostly going to be Amud Aleph. The Gemara on Amud Beis is going to discuss what we can do in the absence of one of the Bali Din, whether we can receive Edim in the absence of one of the parties, whether we can be Mekayim Shtar, whether we can write a document certifying the validity of the shtar without one of the parties. So the Gemara is going to discuss all of those details on Amud Beis. So let's pick up at the top of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the first line of Adabar Ava. So what the Gemara is going to start with is yesterday we had seen a statement of Rami Bar Chama, who had said on the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that if the father steals from somebody and puts it in front of the children, that the children would be exempt from payment. We had established the Mishnah as being a case where the original owner had already had Yeyosh, had already given up hope of ever recovering the item. And Rami Bar Chama said, from the fact that the original owner has had Yeyosh and the children are exempt from paying, you see that Rishus Yoreish is Kirshus Lokeach Dami, that the property, the possession of an heir, is treated like the possession of a buyer, and it's considered like a different Rishus. So that was the version of Rami Bar Chama that we saw yesterday on the Mishnah. Now the Gemara has a different version of Rami Bar Chama making the same point about a different case. That Rav Ada Bar Ava mani lahad Rabbi Bar Chama aha. Rav Ada Bar Ava taught the statement of Rami Bar Chama not on the Mishnah, but on the following case. That he niach len avien moos shel ribis. If a father leaves over money to children, which contains in it interest money, avo pisha yodin shehen shel ribis ein chayav en lahachzir. Even though they know that this money contains ribis and that it's problematic money that the father never should have taken, because we know that ribis between two Jews is usur, is forbidden, nonetheless, the children are not chayav lahachzir. The children don't have to return the ribis to the person from whom the interest was collected. So on that statement, Rav Ada Bar Ava taught the statement of Rami Bar Chama and said, Amar Rami Bar Chama, zos omeres vishus yoresh kirshus lokeach dami. That this statement tells us that Rishus Yoresh, that the property of the heir is like the property of a buyer, because the fact that the children are no longer responsible to return the ribis shows that when the property changed possession from the father to the children, that the children fully acquired it, and they're not obligated to return the ribis, even though the father would have been. You see that this change in possession is consequential. Now Rava Amar Rava again is going to reject Rami Bar Chama. On the Mishnah, he had rejected Rami Bar Chama for a different reason. Now that the statement of Rami Bar Chama is being taught on this case of Ribis, Rava still has a rejection, but a slightly different rejection. Rava Amar, La'olam emelecha rishus yoresh lav kirshus lokeach dami. Rava says, really, I could tell you that the property, the possession of an heir, is not like the possession of a buyer. B'shayni hacha da'amar kra al tikach me'ito neshach v'tarbit. Here, it's different. Here, the reason the heirs are not responsible to pay back the interest payment is not because Rishus Yoresh is Kirshus Lokeach Dami, but it's because the Pasuk, the verse, when describing the Isser of taking interest, says that you cannot take interest from a person. And it's interesting, we actually need the continuation of the Pasuk, which the Gemara doesn't quote for us, but I'll show you why in a second. So we say about this Pasuk that Ahadir Le Ki Hechi Denechi Bahadach. You have to return the interest in order for the person to live together with you. Now, where exactly is this drasha coming from, that you have to return the interest in order for the person to be able to live together with you? All the pasuk says is don't take interest. So you have to look, shafil seife dekra, look at the end of the pasuk. It's quoted here on the side of the Gemara from Vayikra Chav Hei Lamed Vav. The pasuk says, al tikach meito neshech v'yatarbit v'yareta me'elokecha v'chei achicha imach. Don't take interest from the person, and you have to be fearful of Hashem your God, and your brother should live together with you. So the Gemara didn't quote the end of the Pasuk, but Rava is really making a comment based on the end of the Pasuk and saying the reason the Torah requires you to return the interest to begin with is, or to not take it at all also, is so that your brother will be able to live together harmoniously with you. And says, Rava, lididei ka mezair le'rachmana, rachmana livrei lo mezair le'rachmana. The Torah is only warning the person himself, the creditor himself, the father, that he has to return the interest, not take the interest to begin with, to allow the borrower to be able to live together with him. But the children are not commanded in this requirement of not taking interest, of returning interest, etc. So Rava would say, I reject you wholeheartedly, Rami Bar Chama. Really, the reason the children do not have to pay back the ribis is not because Rishus Yoresh is Rishus Lokeach Dami, that the possession of the heirs is treated like the possession of the buyers, but rather it's because the whole warning that the Torah gives is only for the person himself, not for his children. So now the Gemara makes a comment that man de masni la abraisa kol shekein amas nisen. If one taught the statement of Rami Bar Chama that rishus yorishus kirshus lo keach tami on the braisa that we just quoted, then all the more so they would teach that statement on the Mishnah. Let's see Rashi. How does he explain that? Man de masni la, the second Rashi on the page, leha de Rami Bar Chama abraisa kol shekein amas nisen. So right, the leka taima acharina le miftere. So says Rashi, based on the Gemara, that if you teach the statement of Rami Bar Chama on the Braisa, all the more so you would teach it on the Mishnah, because there's no other way to explain the Mishnah why the children would be exempt from having to pay the person who was stolen from. Even though there is the explanation of Rava, the Gemara's assumption is that Rava's explanation is not so compelling. And if you teach the statement of Rami Bar Chama that Rishus Yorish is Kishus Lokeach Tami in the case of the Braisa by Ribbis, all the more so that's going to be your explanation for why the children are exempt from having to pay the theft back when they inherit it from their father, because Rishus Yorish is Kishus Lokeach Tami. But Man de Masni La Amas Nisen, if you teach the statement of Rami Bar Chama on the Mishnah about that case of Gzela, then about a Braisa, when it comes to the Braisa about Ribbis, Rami Bar Chama Kirava Masnila, Rami Bar Chama. When it comes to the Braisa, you'd assume that Rami Bar Chama would just explain the Braisa the exact same way as Rava, that it really would have nothing to do with Rishus Yorish Kirsush Lokeach Tami, and it would really only be based on the fact that only the father is commanded to return the ribbis to make sure that the person can live together with you, but the children would not be commanded. So for whatever reason, the Gemara is assuming that the explanation of Rava would be compelling on the Braisa, but it would not be compelling on the Mishnah, and that's why if you teach the statement Rami Bar Chama on the Braisa Kol Shekein, you're going to say that on the Mishnah. If you say it on the Mishnah, then the Braisa you might explain like Rami Bar Chama. Now there is a lot of debate with that. If you look in Rashi, he actually has two different versions of this text. One says that the Kol Shekein, the logical inference, can be extrapolated from the Mishnah to the Braisa, and one version says basically the two options are both present in Rashi. And Rashi says he heard both explanations. He likes the one that we started with, the one that we just said in the Gemara. But if you look in the Bach, he actually changes the Girsa around, and it's a little bit unclear which one Rashi even prefers. Right at the end of the Rashi for us, the third Rashi on the page, Man de Masni La Masnis and Abba Draisa Rami Bar Chama. So Rashi says Virishon Shamativ the Iker. In our version, that Rashi liked the first explanation, is what we said. But if you look in the Bach, he changes it to Rishon Shamati Ve'achron Iker, that he heard the first explanation, but he likes the second explanation better. So it's a little bit unclear what's the preferred version, but we'll just go with the simple explanation of our Gemara. If you teach Rami Bar Chama on the Braisa, all the more so on the Mishnah. If you teach Rami Bar Chama on the Mishnah, the Braisa, you're going to explain not like Rami Bar Chama, but like Rava.
Yeah, there's a Kal V'Chomer here also that you come into play. When it comes to Gzela, the pasuk explicitly says Veheshev is Gzela. So if we're in the situation where the things that were stolen have to be returned, if you left it to your Yorshim, the Yorshim are not obligated to return it, then all the more certain than in the case of Ribbis, where there is no explicit statement Veheshev is Ribbis, that if you left it to your Yorshim, you don't have to return it.
Uh-huh. So I'm just curious if that's the other explanation of Rashi. So I think that explanation certainly makes sense. I'm assuming that would fit with Rashi. If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying there's a kol shekein from the Mishnah to the Braisa.
Our version
of the Gemara has a kol shekein from the Braisa to the Mishnah, but the other version that's quoted in Rashi, which maybe he prefers, depending on the Bach's Girsa or not, according to the Bach's Girsa, yes, could be consistent with that kol shekein. If there's a mitzvah to return an gzela, you don't have to return it, then kol shekein by the ribbis, but there's no mitzvah to return it.
What about a difference on a gzela? If a Jew stole from a goy, he's still obligated to return it, right? The gzela?
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
Even if it's papa from Shabbat, right? Because we assume that the goy doesn't have an issue.
But if you took ribbis from a goy, that's a mitzvah.
Right.
So why isn't that a difference between the two?
It is a difference, but how does it come into play?
I don't think you're suggesting here, but I think you're saying in general. You would assume that ribbis relates to theft, so if it's true that you have to return the theft of a goy, you should also have to return the theft.
Why would you
of
say ribbis relates to theft?
Well, I don't know, that seems to be the assumption
of
the question.
Ribbis is the Torah said you're allowed to take ribbis from a goy, right?
So it's not theft.
That's a possible
Right, so we can't extrapolate from the context of theft where you have to return it.
So I'm saying, so that why doesn't the law answer that? That's the difference between Zela and Rippus also, that they're not parallel.
Right, I guess because the assumption here is that we're dealing with Jews. So you're saying there'd be a difference if it was a non-Jew versus a not. If both cases were non-Jews, I think the assumption here is that we're dealing with Jews. So in both cases, you'd have to return it, right? That makes sense.
Okay.
I think Ribbis is also because it's Ribbis. Not because it's Gzela. The Torah asked Ribbis.
Right.
Right, I think that's right.
Yeah.
It's a separate law. Right. Yeah.
But it's not applicable to non-Jews.
All right, so let's continue on now with Tanur Rabbanan. The Brisa says as follows: Hagozel Machil as Banav Keturim Minasalim. If a person steals and feeds the theft to his children, they'd be exempt from having to pay. Hineach Lifneim. If he puts it in front of them, Gedolim Chayav in the Shalim, Ektanim Keturim in the Shalim. If he puts it in front of the children, then if the children are old, are of age, they're 13, they would have to pay it back. But if they're still children, they're still ktanim, they would not have to pay it back. Bim amru gedolim einanu yodin cheshbonos shechashav avinu imach peturim. If the children who are old and otherwise would have had to pay say that they don't know the various calculations, the various arrangements that their father worked out with the person from whom the object was stolen, they'd be exempt from having to pay. They wouldn't have to pay because they could say, we don't know exactly what our father did with you. Maybe we're not obligated to pay you. So ask the Gemara, Mishum Da'amri, Einan Yodin Peturin, just because they say, we're not really sure what our father did, you're just going to let them off the hook? That doesn't make any sense. Then every single person could just say, oh yeah, I don't know what my father did, so I'm not obligated to pay you.
That's one of those Bari Vashemas where the Bari carries the day.
Right, exactly. I think Rashi makes that comment. That comment says, Rashi, Dibur Maschal, Mishum Da'in Yodin Peturin, Bitmiya. It's an astonishing question the Gemara asks. Ho be Yodim Sheb Gzela Ba Liado, Debari v'shemahu ubari adiv. Since they know that this property came into their father's possession through theft, it's a bari v'shema. The person claiming the item is completely confident in his claim. The children who are saying, we don't know the calculations that our father made with you, are not so confident. And the confident party should win in this case.
It works because the shema is only saying, he's acknowledging that it was stolen. He just doesn't know whether it was returned.
Right, exactly. It relates to our discussion way back when, somewhere in the Lamed or something like that. Amarava Hachika Amar. Says Rava, no, you misunderstood what the Braisa was saying. It's not that the children don't know the calculations that were made with the other party, but Gidolim Shamru Yodimanu Cheshbono Shechashav Avinu Imach Velo Pashlecha Gabe Velo Midi Peturim. If the older children who would have been responsible to pay say, we know the calculations that our father made with you, and we know that you're not owed anything, that there's nothing left for us to have to pay you, then they'd be exempt. And it's important.
Why is there a contradiction to the Mishnah here, isn't there?
There's a contradiction to the Mishnah, why?
The Mishnah said that if you leave it to your children, the children don't have to pay it back.
Right, so I just wanted to point out that this Braisa is assuming like sumchus, that young children are exempt, and that's why there's a difference between old children and young children. The Gemara later is going to have the position of the Rabban and the Chachamim who hold that both old children and young children are obligated to pay. Are both obligated to pay. But you're saying none of those opinions seem to fit with the Mishnah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so I guess the question is how we establish the Mishnah. The Mishnah, I mean, we went back and forth if it was Gzela Kayemes or Ein Gzela Kayemes. Let's say it was
Ein Yush.
Lachar Yeush, but let's say Ein Gzela Kayemes, that the children had already eaten the item. So here, if we're dealing with a case where Gzela is Kayemes, where the Gzela is still around.
Machlis Barav, no. Here we had Torah.
Here you're saying also.
Machlis Barav.
Yeah, so the pashtus then is that this disagrees with the Mishnah. That this
maybe
there's
a Yush, before Yush, Acha Yush issue.
No, Rashi says explicitly. Rashi does say by Ktanim Peturim. Oh, so if you look in Rashi, Gedolim Chayavim, V'Rami Bar Chama Mokila Lifnei Yesh. Rami Bar Chama would say that in this case, it's before Yesh, that's why the children would be responsible to pay. And says Rashi, one more, Ketanim Peturim, Delav B'nei Dinaninu, because children can't deal with monetary cases. V'Afal Pi D'Gzela Kayemes, Miu Mechasra Guvyayna. Even if the theft was still around, the young children would be exempt. So it could be a case of the theft still being around. You could say Umachil, so the theft is not around, but it's still Lifnei Yesh, the person has not given up hope of collecting the item, and that's why the children are obligated to pay. So that's assuming, like sumchus, that young children would be exempt from paying. Now, Tani idach hagozel umachil as banav peturim milashalim. If one steals and feeds it to their children, they'd be exempt from having to pay. Hiniach lifneim ba'achalum bin gdolim b'tanim chayavim. If he put it in front of the children and they ate the object, then whether they're gedolim or they're tanim, they would be obligated. And this is assuming, like that position we just mentioned, the Rabbanan who think that Ketanim would be obligated to pay. So ask the Gemara, Ketanim mi mechayvi? Lo yehei ela da azik azuke. Why are the young children obligated to pay? They should just be like someone who is mazik. Right? Rashi says, Lo yehei ela da azik azuke. Nichnas lechatzir de nigzal v'hiziko. They're like somebody who goes into the courtyard, the property of the person who was stolen from, and they injured him. And we know that Ketanim are not obligated to pay in such a case, as Rashi quotes from the Mishnah before, Daf Pei Zayin, Vehem Shechavlu Ba'acherim Peturim, that when young children injure somebody else, they're not obligated to pay. That's why the Mishnah said, Giyasan Ra, that their whole dealing is a little bit unfair. When you injure them, you're obligated. When they injure you, they're not obligated. So why is it that the children are obligated to pay in this case? So Amar of Papa, Hachi Kamar, Hiniach Lifneim Ba'adayin Lo Achalum, Bing Dolim, Bing Tanim, Chayavim. Says Rav Papa, you misunderstood the Brisa. The Brisa was only saying that if the father put the theft in front of the children, and they had not yet eaten it, it's still Gzela Kayames, then both Gedolim and Ketanim would be obligated to pay, both old children and young children would have to pay. So that's how we can explain the obligation of the children. Now Amar Rava, Hiniach Lehem Aviyam Parashi Ula, Rava says, if the father died and left around a cow that was borrowed, the children can use the cow for the entire duration of the borrowing of the father. Now, Mesa ain chayavin beonsea. If the cow died naturally, the children would not be obligated in the onsen of the cow. Generally, a shoel, one who borrows, is chayav beonsen, and therefore, even if the cow just died naturally, the shoel would be obligated. But here, the children are not obligated because they never accepted that they were going to borrow this cow. They never accepted that they're going to watch the cow. They're just using it since their father had borrowed it and it was still being borrowed. Now, kasvurim shel aviyim hi v'tavchua ba'achalua v'shalmen dmei basar b'zol. If they thought it was their father's cow and they went ahead and shechted it and ate it, then they would have to pay dmei basar b'zol. They'd have to pay for the value of the cow based on a cheap appraisal or valuation. And Rashi tells us that that would always be a two-thirds payment. You'd have to pay for it at a two-thirds value. This would be true, presumably, even if they didn't think it was their father's, right? The Gemara said, Kazurim shel aviyim hi, they thought it was their father's. So I don't think it's saying if they didn't think it was their father's, they wouldn't have to pay this. I think the assumption is just if they knew it wasn't their father's, they would never have shechted it and eaten it. So the only reason they shechted it and ate it was because they thought it was their father's, and they're obligated to pay two-thirds. Also, if their father left them property with which they can pay, they'd be obligated to pay. And that last statement of could be understood as going on two cases in this statement of Rava. There are those who teach that statement of Rava on the Resha, that if your father leaves you around property with which you can pay, then you'd be obligated to pay in the Resha, in the case of Mesa, Ein Chayavin Beonsea. When the cow dies naturally, generally you would not be obligated to pay, but if your father left you property, then you would be obligated to pay. Or you could teach it on the Seifa, which is where they shechted the cow, thinking that it was their father's. We said they would have to pay two-thirds payment, but if their father left them around money with which they can pay, then they'd have to pay complete payment, not two-thirds, but the whole value. So those are the two options for where you would teach that statement of Hiniach Lehem Aviyim Acharayas Nechasim. And says the Gemara, Ma'an Demasni La'Aresha, Kol Shekein HaSeifa, Upliga Derav Papa. If you assume that that statement of Hiniach Lehem Aviyim, if their father leaves them around property with which they can pay, goes on the Resha, where the cow died naturally, then all the more so you would say that when they shechted the animal thinking it was their father's, that they'd be obligated to pay there also, complete payment, and that would go against Rav Papa. Rav Papa, as we're going to see in a second, holds that a shoel doesn't become obligated in the onsim until the onus actually occurs. You don't become obligated in onsim when you borrow the animal or the item originally. You only become obligated when the onus occurs. So if we're assuming that if your father left you property, you would have to pay in the resha where the cow died naturally, that's against Rav Papa, because Rav Papa would say you don't even become obligated in the onsen until that ones actually happens, until the cow actually dies naturally, and by then we can't make you obligated because the cow's already dead. So that would go against Rav Papa. But man demasni la asefa avala resha lo v'hainu de Rav Papa. If you teach the statement that if the father left around property, you'd be obligated to pay on the seifa where they thought it was their father's cow and they went ahead and shechted it, and they wouldn't have to pay in such a case two-thirds payment, but they now have to pay full payment because their father left them property. But in the resha where the cow died naturally, they would not be obligated to pay. That would be like Rav Papa, because that would be assuming that they didn't take responsibility from the time of the borrowing. They only took responsibility from the time of the ones. That's why they're exempt from paying when the cow dies naturally, and that's consistent with Rav Papa, as Rav Papa says, the Amar of Papa haita para gnuvalo v'tavcha b'shabes chayav v'far chayav v'gneva kodim shiyava l'day eser shabes. If a cow was stolen, someone had it through theft, and they shechted it on Shabbos, they'd be obligated for shechting it on Shabbos. They'd be obligated for payment also. Shekvar chayav b'gneva kodim shiyava l'day eser Shabbos. Because they were already obligated in payment from the time that they stole it, and that happened before the Isur Shabbos. So we don't say commonly with the Rabbi Mineh, because the two Isurim are happening at different times. Therefore, you'd be obligated for shechting on Shabbos. You'd be obligated for the theft that took place before Shabbos. But haita para she'ulalo v'tavcha v'Shabbos pater she'isur Shabbos v'isur gneva b'ayin ke'achad. If you had a cow that was borrowed and you shechted it on Shabbos, then you'd be exempt. Because the Isser Shabbos and the Isser Gneva are happening at the same time, you basically steal the cow at the time that you shecht it, and that's happening on Shabbos, and therefore, commonly by the Rabbi Mineh, you wouldn't be obligated to pay for the theft. I just want to look at one thing here in the Rashi's. Good. So depending on how you teach that statement of Hiniach Lai Maviyam Acharayas Nechasim, if you teach it on the Reisha, it goes against Rav Papa, and if you teach it on the Seifa, then it fits hand in hand with Rav Papa, who says that you only become responsible for the onus when the onus happens, but not originally when you borrow the animal. Now, Tana Rabban, Beheshiv is Hagzela Asher Gazal, Ma Tamaloma Asher Gazal, Yachzil Kein She Gazal. The Brisa quotes the Pasuk, which we alluded to earlier, that you have to return the theft. And the Gemara asks, why does the Torah tell us that you have to return the theft which you stole? If it's telling us return the theft, we know you stole something. So why do we need this extra clause of which you stole? So says the Gemara, that teaches us that you have to return it like it was when you stole it. Mikan amru hagozel machil asbana pitur min l'shalim hineach l'kneem bin gdolim bin tanim chayavim. Based on that principle, we said that if you steal and feed it to your children, they'd be exempt from having to pay. But if you put it in front of them and the gzela is still around, then the children, whether they're old or young, they'd be obligated to pay. And that's like the Rabbanan that we alluded to before. In the name of Sumchus, they said that only old children would be obligated to pay. Young children would not be obligated to pay because they are not people who can deal with cases of din. Now, on that theme, we're going to see a bunch of dinim, a bunch of cases about children and whether their cases can be adjudicated or not. So says the Gemara, Bar Chamua de Rabbi Yirmiya, Tarak Gali Ba'ape de Rabbi Yirmiya. The son of the father-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiya, meaning Rabbi Yirmiya's brother-in-law, closed a door in front of Rabbi Yirmiya. Essentially, what was happening was there was a house that Rabbi Yirmiya wanted to make a chazaka on, and the brother-in-law shut the door in front of Rabbi Yirmiya to try to prevent him from being able to be machzik on this house. And Rashi just tells us that Baruch Hamuah, the Rabbi Yirmiya, that this brother-in-law, this son of the father-in-law, was a katan. He was a child. So Atal Kami the Rabbi Avin. Rabbi Yirmiya now comes in front of Rabbi Avin, and he's all upset. How could it be that my brother-in-law would just prevent my chazaka from happening on this house? So Amar, Rabbi Avin, responded to Rabbi Yirmiya and said, Shalohu Toveya. He's just claiming his own house. You didn't do anything to be machzik on this house. So the child is allowed to claim that this is his house and try to prevent you from being machzik on it. Amr Le responds, Rabbi Yirmiya to Rabbi Avin, V'hamaitina sahadi da'achzika be b'chayi da'avua. I'm going to bring you witnesses who can prove that I was machzik in this field during the life of his father, during the life of my father-in-law. And therefore, it's not shalohu toveah. He's not claiming his own house, which would have fallen to him, be Yerusha, from his father, because I was machzik on it. So ask the Gemara, Amr Le v'chi mekablin, and this is really Rabbi Avin responding to Rabbi Yirmiya, Amr Le v'chi mekablin edim shalo b'fnei bal din. Rabbi Yirmiya, I understand you want to bring me witnesses who can prove that you had a chazaka, but we can't accept witnesses in the absence of the bal din. We can't accept witnesses if the other party is not here. And since the other party in this case is a child, he's someone who's lav b'nei din, he's not considered a valid party, he can't adjudicate cases, he can't be involved in cases in Beis Din, then any edim that you bring will be considered shalob b'fnei bal din, and we can't accept witnesses shalob b'fnei bal din. So ask the Gemara v'lo, can we really not accept witnesses in the absence of the bal din? V'akatani b'ng dolim b'ng tanim chayavim. The Braisa that we just saw said that according to the Rabbanan, you can take payment both from old children and from young children. So it sounds like we can deal with cases even that involve tanim. So Amr Le responds Rabbi Avin to Rabbi Yirmiya, Hari machlokes sumchus b'tzidcha. Rabbi Yamin responds, okay, yeah, you're quoting me the Rabbanan from that Braisa, but Sumchus is right there arguing on the side of the Rabbanan and says that you can't deal with cases of children. So then Rabbi Yirmiyah gets all frustrated and says, Amar Ichbol Kule Alma Vekaike Sumchus Lafguan Lididi. Rabbi Yirmiyah gets upset and he says, is the whole world just trying to establish cases like Sumchus in order to mess me over, in order to be motzi this house that I was trying to be machzik on? Meaning, obviously, we're not going to paskin like Sumchus, so why is Rabbi Avin telling me, oh yeah, there's this position of Sumchus who holds that ketanim are labnei din and you can't deal with cases involving tanim because that's considered shelo b'tnei bal din? I don't understand. Why is the whole world out to get me? Adahachi igagel milta. Throughout this whole time, the case eventually proceeded on. And Ata Umata Lakami Rabbi Avo. It came in front of Rabbi Avo. So Amar Rabbi Avo said, Lo Shmielchu Hadar Rabbi Yosef Barchama Amar Yosha, Damar Rabbi Yosef Barchama Amar Rabbi Yosha, Tinok Shetakaf Avadav, Vayara the Tok Sadashel Chabero, Vamar Shalihu, In Omrim Namtimach in the Yagdil, Elamotir Miyadom Yad, Oksha Yagdil, Yavi Aden Venir. So I just quoted a lot, but let's go back and explain. Rabbi Avo says, I don't understand. Why are you guys saying that we can't deal with a case of a katan? Didn't you hear the statement of Rabbi Yosef Barchama Amar Rabbi Yosha, who said that if a tinok takes slaves and he goes down into the field of his friend and he says that this is my field, we don't say that we're going to wait until the katan grows up so that we can deal with this case in Beis Din. Rather, what we do is we remove the field from his possession. We assume that it's not his right away. And then when he gets older, he could try to bring Edim and we'll see if he can win the case. So why are we saying that the katan, the brother-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiyah, should hold on to the house because we can't adjudicate cases shelo b'fnei bal din, and we're dealing with a katan here? It's clear from the statement of Yosef Barchama Amar Rabbi Yosha that when you're dealing with a katan and you can't adjudicate the case, what you do is you just remove him from the property immediately and you'll deal with the case in the future. So we should take the object away from the katan, and in theory we should hold on to it or potentially even give it to Rabbi Yirmiyah. So responds the Gemara, mi dami hatam hu demafkina mine de lo kaimalei achazaka, or the Bach, I think, takes out the letter Aleph, chazaka de avuha. The cases aren't comparable. In the statement of Rabbi Yosef Barchama Rabbi Yosha, we would remove the field from the possession of the katan because he doesn't have a chazaka of his father. But where the katan has a chazaka of his father, we would not remove it from his possession. So in this case, where the son, the brother-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiyah, the son of Rabbi Yirmiyah's father-in-law, has the chazaka that this house used to belong to his father, we wouldn't remove the property from him, even though he's a katan. We're not going to say, let's wait until he gets older and we'll deal with it then. We should allow the katan to remain holding on to the property, and that's why we didn't remove it from the katan. Now, Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Rabbi Shabbatai, Mekablin Eidim Shelo B'fnei Bal Din. On a similar theme, Rav Ashi teaches us, and the Masoros HaShas points out that maybe this was an earlier Rav Ashi, not the Rav Ashi that we're used to, or perhaps it's a continuation of what the Gemara had said earlier. But he quotes in the name of Rabbi Shabbatai that we could receive Eidim Shelo B'fnei Bal Din. So then, Toiba Rabbi Yochanan, Mekablin Eidim Shelo B'fnei Bal Din. Rabbi Yochanan got all upset and says, what do you mean we can accept witnesses in the absence of one of the parties? We don't do that. So, Kibla Mine Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Chanina, Kigon Shahayahu Chole O Eidav Cholim. The case, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina explained, that the case where we would accept Eidim Shelo B'fnei Bal Din must be like a case where either the party was sick or his witnesses were sick. Or his witnesses wanted to go overseas, and they called to the party to come to Beis Din, and he didn't come, he couldn't come. So only in such a case would we accept witnesses, shelo b'fnei bal din, in the absence of one of the parties, but otherwise not. Now, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, mekablin eidim shelo b'fnei bal din. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel makes the same statement that we could accept witnesses even in the absence of one of the parties. So Amar Mar Ukva,
without qualification.
Without qualification, I think Marukva is now going to qualify. Amar Marukva, the Didi Mifarshi Lamine de Shmuel, Marukva said, I got an explanation of this statement that Shmuel made from Shmuel, that the only case where we would accept witnesses, Shelo B'fnei Bal Din, is Kigon de Patchule Bedine Veshalchule Belo Ata. The case must be where they started to adjudicate his case, and they called him and told him to come to Beis Din, and he didn't come. Avalo Patchule Bedina, if they didn't call to him to come to the court to deal with his case, he could say, I want to go to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. So asking if he can make this claim, I'd rather deal with my case in the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, then even when they called to him and they told him to come to start his court case, he can still say, I want to go to the Beis Din HaGadol to adjudicate my case. So Amar Ravina, kigon denaka diska mi Beis Din HaGadol. Ravina explains that the case where we would accept witnesses, even in the absence of one of the parties, must be where we have a document showing that the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim called this person to come to the court to adjudicate his case, and he didn't come. So in such a case, if he denied to come even to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim already, then we could accept witnesses, Shelo Bifnei Baldin. Now, Amar Rav, Mekayman es Hashar, Shelo Bifnei Baldin. Says Rav, we can also verify the validity of a document within the absence of one of the parties. That essentially what we would do is we would get witnesses who can vouch for the signatures of the witnesses who are signed on the document, and a Beis Din of three people would write, Rashi quotes it, Bimotav Tlata Havina, we were gathered here together, three people, Ba'atu Ploni Uploni, and two witnesses came, Ba'asidu Achatima Sedayu, Ba'ashronoi Vekamainui Kidichazi. And two witnesses came and testified about the signatures on the document, and we verified and validated the document appropriately. So we could do that even in the absence of one of the parties. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ein Mekayman Et Hashtar Shelo Bifnei Baldin. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says, no, you cannot verify a shtar in the absence of one of the parties. So Amar Rav Sheshes to Rabbi Yossi Bar Avahu. Rav Sheshes says to Rabbi Yossi Bar Avahu, As Baruch Hala Taimei de Rabbi Yochanan. I'll explain to you the reason for Rabbi Yochanan's statement that you can't verify a document in the absence of one of the parties. Amar Krab, because the pasuk says v'huad bivalav velo yishmerenu, that you have to warn an owner about his ox, and he has to be negligent and not guard the ox properly, and then the ox goes and damages. Amra Torah yavo bal hashor beyamod al shora. The Torah is telling us that what has to happen is that the owner of the ox has to come and stand near his ox. When you're warning this ox, v'huad bivalav, you have to warn the owner, the ox has to be there with the owner together. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan would say, you can't be mekayem shtar shelo bifnei baldin, you can't verify a shtar in the absence of one of the parties. So Amar Rav Hilchata mekayem es shtar shelo bifnei baldin, ba'afilu omer v'tzaveach. Says Rav, the halacha is that we can be mekayem shtar, we can verify a shtar even in the absence of one of the parties, like Rav, not like Rabbi Yochanan, even if that party who's absent is standing up and screaming and saying, don't verify the shtar, don't validate the shtar because it's mezuyaf, it's forgery. We're not worried about that. If he's not here, we can be mekayem shtar even without him. The Amar Nakitu li Zimna de Maitina Sahadi Umarana le Lishtara Naktina lay. If he says, just give me a little bit of time, I'm going to bring witnesses who are going to invalidate the shtar, then we would give him that time. We would wait for him to bring the witnesses. If he comes, then great. He'll bring his witnesses. He'll invalidate the shtar. And at the end of the process, that'll be the end of the process. But if he never comes, natrinan le bahab. If he doesn't come, we wait for him a Monday and a Thursday and a Monday. And then if he hasn't come, if he doesn't come, kadvinan peticha ilave tishin yomi. Then we write a document. Rashi explains the peticha is a shtar shamta al she'ein poreah hachov. It's a document that would essentially ostracize or excommunicate this person over the fact that he's not paying off his obligation. So we would write such a document for 90 days.
You excommunicate him for not paying his chayv?
I think the shtar peticha doesn't fully excommunicate him, but it begins the process and sort of puts him into chayrim a little bit. The Gemara is going to differentiate between peticha and shamta, the difference between actual excommunication and this document, which would just do that. As far as the question, though, you're saying it seems unfair or extreme to excommunicate the guy just for not paying back the obligation.
You have a valid reason for excommunicating him. He was summoned to Beis Din and he didn't show.
Right, so I think that's the real reason, is because he's denying the validity of the court and not coming to Beis Din. You're saying that still seems extreme?
I thought I saw it that they do it because he didn't pay.
That's what Rashi just said. So that's what Rashi says. But I think it's not just the fact that he's not paying the obligation as much as it's that he's not listening to the Beis Din and he's rejecting the whole court process. So we write this document for 90 days. Tlatin kamay lo nachtinan lenechsei, de amar, or the Bach changes it, de emor katarach bezuze venezov. The first 30 days of this 90-day period, we can't go down into the property of the debtor and collect payment from his property, because we have to assume that he is trying to take out loans and he's trying to borrow money to be able to pay back his obligation. So the first 30 days, we're not going to go into his property. The next 30 days, we're also not going to go into his property, because we'll say that maybe he couldn't find anybody to borrow from, and now he's working hard to try to sell property to collect enough money to pay off his debt. The last 30 days, we're also not going to go down into his property, because we're going to assume that the person who's trying to buy his property is working hard to find money to be able to buy the property. So first 30 days, we're assuming he's trying to find a loan. The next 30 days, we're assuming he's trying to find he's trying to sell his property and find buyers. And then the last 30 days, you have to assume that those buyers are trying to find money to be able to buy. So for those 90 days, we're not going to go into his property. Lo ata katvina nadrachta anichse. If he doesn't come after these 90 days, then we're going to write a harsha on his property. We had discussed harsha adrachta on daf ayin, Amud Aleph, way back when, 6 weeks ago. So if he doesn't come in 90 days, then we write a harsha, which allows somebody to go into his property and collect payment. Bahani mili da amar atina. And that's only true if he says he's going to come. If he says, I'm never going to come, then we can write a harsha on his property right away. You don't even need to wait for the 90 days. We only go through this whole property, this whole process when it comes to a loan. But if he has a deposit that he's not paying back, then immediately we could write a harsha and we could go and collect the pikadon or collect property in accordance to the value of the pikadon. We only write a harsha to collect from land, but we don't write a harsha to collect from physical property, movable property. Dilma shamit ve'achalihu malveh l'metalteli, because we're concerned that if we collect movable property through the harsha, and the creditor has that movable property, maybe he's going to consume it, maybe he's going to eat it. V'chi ati lo ve'umayti sahadi umara le'lishtara lo mishkach midi le'migbeh. And we're concerned that if the debtor then comes and bring witnesses showing that the shtar that obligates him was invalid, there's not going to be anything for him to collect property from the creditor in accordance with the property that the creditor had taken from the debtor. Because maybe he doesn't have any property, the debtor won't be able to collect anything back for what was taken from him. So says the Gemara then, Ve'i isle mikarkoi lemalve kadvinon. If the creditor has land from which we could collect, then you could even write a harsha on metaltalin, on movable property, because even if he eats it, there'll still be property left over to collect from in the event that the debtor brings witnesses that show that the whole shtar is invalid. But the Gemara says that's not right, the lohi. Really, there's no difference between whether the malva, whether the creditor has land or not. Adrachta metaltali lo katvina. We never write a harsha on movable property. Afal gav de islay mekarkai, even if the malva has land, because chayshin and shematachsif. Because we're concerned that that land might deteriorate in value, and therefore there won't be enough value left over to collect from the creditor for what he ate from the debtor. V'chi katvina nadrachta mod inan le. When we write this harsha, we inform the debtor that we're writing this harsha and people are going to come to collect property from him. V'hani mili de mikrav, but we only inform him if he's close. Aval mirchak, well, if he's far away, we wouldn't inform him. V'yim mirchak v'ikka krovim, if he is far away, but he has relatives who might be nearby or who he can communicate with that could then communicate with him. Inami ika sharasa da azliv asu hasam. Or if they're caravans which are traveling back and forth between here and wherever this guy is, who can inform him that we're writing a harsha. Then mashina le tracer yarcheshata ad da azla the ati sharasa. Then we would wait 12 months until the caravans go back and forth, tell the guy that we want him to come to Beis Din, we want him to pay off his debt. Just like Ravino waited 12 months for Mar'acha until the caravans would go back and forth and inform him that he needs to pay off his debt, he needs to come to court. But the Gemara says that's not a good proof. Elohi, that story is not relevant over here because Hatam Inish Alima Hava, in that story Mar'acha was a very strong, powerful person, and he have matra adracht liyade lo have efshe lafuke mina. Even if they had written a harsha with him being so far away, nobody would have been able to collect from him because he was so strong. There's no way they could have extracted any payment from his possession. Avahacha lo natrinanle. But in general, even if you're far away, we're not going to wait for 12 months if there are caravans traveling back and forth and they can inform you that we want you to come and pay off your debt. Ella ad azul shlicha betlata b'shapta va'ata barba b'shapta ulechamsha b'shapta kai bedine. What we would really only allow for is if we could send a shliach, we could send a messenger from Beis Din who can go on Tuesday and inform this guy. He can bring him on Wednesday to the place where the Beis Din is, and on Thursday, on the fifth day of the week, we could adjudicate his case because we know that Ezra was metakein that batei divin kuyim ba'ayaros rather sheni v'chamishi, that the courts, the Bate Din, should be present in the cities on Mondays and Thursdays, and that's part of why Kriyas HaTorah is on Monday and Thursdays also. We had seen that about 30 daf ago on Daf Pei Beis. Good. Now, Amar Ravina, says Ravina, Haish lucha derabanan, me'aminin le kevetre. Says Ravina, we can believe a shliach of the rabbis, we can believe a shliach that's sent by Beis Din, like two witnesses. It's as if he's like two witnesses. But v'hani mili l'shamta, aval p'ticha, keman de'mamona kamachaser le, de'kabayi le'lemetav le'zuze le'sifra, lo. It's only true that we can believe a shliach derabanan, we can believe a shliach sent by the Beis Din, that he's going to do everything we told him to do to tell this person who's refusing to come to Beis Din, if we're sending him to put the guy into chirim. But if we're sending him to write a shtar, to send a shtar, I guess, that's beginning the process of excommunication, we can't believe the shliach derabanan. We can't believe the messenger sent by Beis Din. Why? Because he needs to extract payment. He's obligating the person who's refusing to come to Beis Din in payment, because that person would have to pay for the value of the shtar. He'd have to pay for the scribe that we hire to write this shtar psicha. And in such a case, we can't rely on the messenger of Beis Din like two witnesses. Now says Ravina further, Amar Ravina, Yavinan Zimna Apuma de Issa va Apuma de Shivivi. We can also inform a person that they need to come to Beis Din and we're waiting for them using a woman and using neighbors. Velo Amran Ella Delese Bimasa, Aval Ise Bimasa lo, da Amrinan Amar lo Amrule, da Amri Ashkinashlicha de Beis Din Bamrule. We can only rely on the person's neighbors or on a woman to inform this person if this person is not in our city. But if the person is our city, then we can't rely on neighbors or on a woman. Why? Because we assume that they're not going to tell the person to come to Beis Din. They're going to say, Ashkechinu shlicha de Beis Din v'amalei, that because the person is in the city, maybe a messenger of Beis Din found the guy and informed him, and thus the woman or the neighbors are not believed or are not relied upon to inform the person. V'lo amran elo de lo chalif abava de Beis Dina, ava chalif abava de Beis Dina lo, amri ashkechu abe Dina v'amalei. Similarly, we're only going to rely on a woman or on neighbors to inform the person to come to Beis Din if the person doesn't come into close proximity to Beis Din ever. But if he comes into close proximity to Beis Din, if he passes over the door of the Beis Din, if he passes in front of the opening to the Beis Din, we can't rely on a woman or neighbors to inform him, because they're going to say maybe the Beis Din themselves found the guy and informed him. Because they're so close, he happens to come by the Beis Din every once in a while. Velo amran elo de asi biyome, avalo asi biyome lo, ema ishtaluye ishtali. Also, we're only going to rely on a woman or on the neighbors if they can come back and forth from the person to the Beis Din in a single day. But if it takes more than a single day to come back and forth, then we don't rely on them to inform the person he needs to come to Beis Din, because we're concerned that maybe throughout this whole long process they forgot to inform the person and they're not trusted, they're not relied upon to inform the person. We'll just conclude a couple more statements of Rava. Amar Rava, Haiman de kasev alei p'ticha adelo ati ledina. If we write a shtar shamta, we write a document of excommunication for a person who is refusing to come to Beis Din, then ad de'ati ledina lo mekarinan lei. We don't rip up that shtar until he actually comes in front of Beis Din to deal with this case. But ad de'lo tzayis ledina, if we write the shtar of excommunication for the fact that he's not listening to the Beis Din, then, and he's not listening to the ruling that's given in Beis Din, then ad de'tzayis lo mekarinan lei. We wouldn't rip up the shtar until he actually listens to the ruling of Beis Din. But says the Gemara, Velohi, Kaven de Amar, Taitina, Karinam Le. We don't accept that last statement of Rava, that if a person is refusing to accept the din of Beis Din, we won't rip up the shtar until he actually accepts the din of Beis Din. Rather, as soon as he said he will listen, even if he hasn't fully listened yet, we're already going to rip up the shtar. Okay, we'll hold it over here.
Thank you, Ray.